Certainly, I have a desire to marry, and your daughter has not yet married or given her word to anyone. Therefore, our marriage, according to the Vedic system, can take place. There are many considerations by Karama Muni before accepting the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. Most important is that Devahuti had first of all fixed her mind on marrying him. She did not choose to have any other man as her husband. That is a great consideration because female psychology dictates that when a woman offers her heart to a man for the first time, it is very difficult for her to take it back. Also, she had not married before. She was a virgin girl. All these considerations convinced Karama Muni to accept her. Therefore he said, "Yes, I shall accept your daughter under religious regulations of marriage." There are different kinds of marriages, of which the first class marriage is held by inviting a suitable bridegroom for the daughter and giving her in charity, well dressed and well decorated with ornaments, along with a dowry according to the means of the father. There are other kinds of marriage, such as Gandhava marriage and marriage by love, which are also accepted as marriage, even if one is forcibly kidnapped and later on accepted as a wife, that is also accepted. But Kadama Muni accepted the first class way of marriage because the father was willing and the daughter was qualified. She had never offered her heart to anyone else. All these considerations made Kadama Muni agree to accept the daughter of Svayambhuva Manu. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyanjana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutare Svayambhuva Kadama Yandarate Svaparantikam Namasrishtam Unumapi Satchukutramatra Surupam Rupam Tasya Grajamburupadim Maturim Gostavritim Radha Kundigiri Varam Ho Radhi Kamaravasam Praptoya Sapatita Kipaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosmi Adishiru Vacha Varam Hurvo Dukamoham Apratacha Tavatmaja Avayora Nurupasa Adyo Vaivahiko Vidihi. The great sage replied, "Certainly I have a desire to marry, and your daughter has not yet married or given her word to anyone. Therefore, our marriage according to the Vedic system can take place." Recently we were reading in the Mukunda Maharaj's book on Miracle on 26 Second Avenue, where he describes the first wedding ceremony in ISKCON. And that was his wedding ceremony. Mukunda Maharaj's wedding ceremony. Before he sent us. Which is the right order. And he was initiated 1 week before that. He had gone out to the market, or his friend had gone out to the market and bought some big red beads. Big red wooden beads. He saw those beads in his house. He still has those beads. He's Japanese. And so they went out and bought a big bundle of beads because I think about 8 or 10 devotees were getting initiated. The first initiation ceremony in 1966. And Mukunda Maharaj, he reveals his thinking at that time and how he was completely unaware of what was happening around him, but he was somehow taken in by Srila Prabhupada, the Swami. And he was very instrumental in Prabhupada. Actually, he found that place, that location, 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada had to move out of residence where he was staying with some crazy guy. So Mukunda Maharaj was requested to help find a suitable place for Srila Prabhupada to relocate. And by Krishna's arrangement, he very quickly found this place, 26 Second Avenue, and he found it to be quite suitable. And he called for Srila Prabhupada to come there and have a look, and Prabhupada liked it very much. And Prabhupada negotiated with the real estate agent. Prabhupada's kind of new to America, but he's not new to these material interactions. He's a Bengali businessman, so he's come to New York and he's not just going to take it on face value. So he negotiated a price, a very cheap price, for the storefront and for a room at the back through a courtyard, Srila Prabhupada's room, at the back of 26 Second Avenue. And he was successful in the negotiation and he charmed the estate agent. And they got, that was the first ISKCON temple. And there they had the first initiation ceremony. And then after the ceremony, the devotees got their names. They had their new names, but they didn't really know much about what the names meant, or what the significance of taking a name was. But they knew they had to chant 16 rounds a day. And for many that was a struggle. They were chanting 16 rounds on these big red beads, not Tulsi Mala from Vrindavan Wallas or Radhakund Walla, but big red beads that they made in America. And they're all the same size, and there was no Krishna bead. But they made 108. So they counted 108 on the red beads. And you'll see pictures of them in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. You can see a picture of Mukunda Maharaj with the red beads around his neck. They wore red beads around their neck. They wore Jagannath around their neck. Jagannath deity on their... Many devotees wore that Jagannath deity around their neck. So then Mukunda Maharaj explains his wedding ceremony, and he said now by now he's becoming familiar with this scene. Swamiji is sitting in front of a mound of sand, and he's making some coloured decorations on the sand, and he has a wooden crate. He'd cut up a wooden crate, fruit box crate for the kindling for the fire, and he had the paraphernalia ready to perform this, the first Vedic marriage sacrifice, Vivaha Samskara, in New York, for this one at least. And Prabhupada recited the mantras, and they were duly married at that ceremony. And then Mukunda Maharaj, he described this feast that Prabhupada made. He made a wedding feast. Prabhupada prepared a wedding feast that was, you know, extraordinary, 14, 16 different preparations and very exotic preparations. And there weren't a lot of guests. And the wedding ceremony took place in Prabhupada's room, upstairs, in Prabhupada's room behind the temple. They had the wedding ceremony. It was decorated with some auspicious symbols. And he was married to Jan. And then, after some time after the wedding, Mukunda Maharaj, you know, he approached Prabhupada and told Prabhupada he wants to go to India. He had this, many people wanted to go to India in those days. So he said to Prabhupada, I'm going to leave now. You know, we've got initiated, I've got my wife, we're properly married. Now we're going to go to India. But Prabhupada was thinking he's just started this movement, International Society, and Michael was one of the first people to sign on the deed for the International Society, and now he's going to leave. He's going to go to India. And he said, yeah, he'll go to India. And Prabhupada said, okay then. And Mukunda Maharaj asked Prabhupada, have you got any contacts in India we could visit? So Prabhupada gave him the name of somebody in Delhi to visit. And then Prabhupada said, why don't you... Mukunda Maharaj said to Prabhupada, I think this Hare Krishna movement will be good in San Francisco. And Prabhupada said, really? Because it was just in New York. It wasn't anywhere else. It was just in New York. And he said, San Francisco, that would be nice. So Prabhupada said, thank you. We'll think about it. And then before he left, he said to Mukunda Maharaj, Mukunda, why don't you start a temple in San Francisco? And he said, but I'm going to India, Prabhupada. I'm going with my wife to India. And he said, you can start it on the way to India. And go there and start a temple. And then Mukunda said, no way, you know, we're not going to start a temple. I'm going to India. That'll really mess up my plans, you know. And his wife's not fully convinced about the whole process, what they're doing, chanting Hare Krishna. And, you know, they've still got their cat with them, and you know, they're not completely convinced. They've given up most things. So then they just thought, no, we won't go. So they went to visit a friend of theirs. This friend of theirs, he was an intellectual type guy, a couple, and he was living in a forest. He was a forester. And his job in the forest was to, he stayed in this big lookout tower in the forest, and he could see over this big, vast state forest. And his job was to spot bushfire. If there's any bushfires coming, he will call the bushfire coming, and the fire brigade will come and put the fire out. That was his job. So Mukunda Maharaj went to meet his friend, who's a bushfire spotter, and stayed with him in his house. And they're looking over the forest. Nice place. Looking over the forest. You know, this guy is a bushfire spotter. He's got a PhD in spotting bushfires for the national park. So Mukunda Maharaj goes there and he tells him, he's an old friend of his from college, and he tells him what he did. He said, you know, two weeks ago I got initiated by the Swami. And he says, wow, who's Swami? Swami in New York. He said, yeah, So I'm in New York. So I told him about Prabhupada, how he is, how he speaks, what he speaks about Bhagavad Gita. And his friend was thinking, wow, this Swami, Dennis, he said, Dennis, this Swami sounds like a really cool guy. You know, looks like he met a good Swami. And he was pleased for him and Jan. And then he said, yeah, we're going to India, we're on our way to India. And he said, oh, that would be really cool, maybe I'll join you. We can go to India together. But Guru Maharaj kept talking about this Swami during the night time. And then in the morning, his friend said to him, and his friend's wife, or partner, said to him, because he mentioned about the San Francisco thing, and that's where they were, they're on that side of America. And he said, why don't we go to San Francisco and open a temple for the Swami? This guy, just out of the blue. And Guru Maharaj said, no, I'm going to India, I'm not going to open a temple. So his friend is telling him that, look, this Swami sounds like a really cool guy. Why don't you do a favor for your Swami and open a temple for him in Hyatt-Ashbury? And then he said, oh, no, you do it. Like, this guy never seen Prabhupada, just heard about Prabhupada. So he convinced Mukunda. He said, no, you come down, we'll go to Hyatt-Ashbury, they know the whole scene there. He said it was like 6 months or 4 months before the Summer of Love. It was the big event, 1966 in San Francisco. And so he convinces Mukunda and Jan to go on the way to America, they should open this temple. So they went down to Hyatt-Ashbury and they founded the first Hare Krishna temple in San Francisco. And I haven't read the rest, but I don't think he goes to India. I think he stays in San Francisco and he meets and greets Prabhupada. And he eventually goes to America, but I don't think he goes at that time. So that was the first wedding ceremony in ISKCON, Michael Mukunda and Janaki. Prabhupada mentions here the qualifications of marriage. What are the qualifications? And Prabhupada said in this wedding ceremony that he doesn't have any position, he's a sannyasi, and people will criticize him for getting involved in marriage ceremony. But he could see it's very important for the Western, particularly in the West, that people get married properly. Because everybody he would see were living as partners, they weren't married properly. And Prabhupada was teaching them Vedic culture, Vanashram. He's teaching them that in the Vedic culture, Sanatana Dharma, marriage is important samskara. And the samskara is a commitment. This samskara brings together like-minded individuals so that they can live together and support each other. Prabhupada gave them vows to take, like we have vows in a normal Western marriage. And his vows were very similar. He said, do you vow to support your husband, Mukunda, to Janaki, in his spiritual life and to be there, you know, like this? And same to Mukunda, you vow to look after and nurture your wife's spiritual and mature life. And so they took their vows. The Srila Prabhupada wrote for them. So he's trying to teach them a whole culture. And he's landed in this flower, you know, 1966 in America, which was in San Francisco and New York City, which was the hotbed of freedom and liberation and completely going against all social norms, to do anything that was different, to say anything that was unusual and extraordinary, to wear anything that looked different, that was cool, that was a thing to do. 1966, in the 60s. And so Srila Prabhupada's coming there and immediately his language and his difference is appealing. His language, his philosophy is appealing. And, you know, his vernacular, the particular words he chooses is very appealing for the hippies. It's cosmic, it's transcendental, it's vibration, it's sound vibration. It's all cool. Everything's presenting in a cool way, like this for the hippies. And they consider Prabhupada to be a very cool person. You know. But he's got these restrictions. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. These are the four things that weren't so cool about Prabhupada in those days. But he was so potent in his presence that they were able to follow the Swami's rules, his regulations. because they knew he had something that was higher. They knew he had something that they were looking for. They were trying to experience this through drugs, through LSD, and through different types of mind-altering substances to expand their consciousness. But Prabhupada was giving them the opportunity to do that without drugs, just through purification of the consciousness, purification of lifestyle. And that became very appealing for them. And so many, many people joined Prabhupada. But the qualifications for the marriage in the Vedic marriage is presented by Manu in Manusmriti. And there are 8 different types of marriages. And Prabhupada's mentioning a few of them here. And he says, this marriage that Svayambhuva Manu is presenting his wife, the Kanyadan, is the highest. It's the highest form of charity that Grihastha can perform. Grihastha, to give the daughter away it's something that is, you know, it's described later on that Svayambhuva Manu embraced his daughter with both arms and he was crying. And tears were bathing his daughter because he's giving away the most precious thing in his life, his daughter. He doesn't have anything more valuable to give to anybody than his daughter in marriage, in the Vivaha Samskar. So that is the highest, Prabhupada says. And then there's other types of marriages. There is also love marriage in Vedic time. It's not just the Bollywood invention. There was a love marriage also. There was a love marriage. Not the highest, but it was a form of marriage, Gandhava marriage. A marriage where Krishna, actually in the Krishna book you can read that Krishna had all these different types of marriages. Most of them, you know, Krishna performs very amazing feats so that we become attracted to him. One time Srila Prabhupada was talking to reporters in Chicago, I think it was. It was in America. And it was a woman reporter. And Prabhupada started telling her, he met her at the airport. Not the one where she's talking about women's liberation, not this one, another one. He met her at the airport. And Prabhupada started telling the story of Krishna marrying 16,108 wives. This reporter. And the devotees were shocked, because Prabhupada doesn't usually tell lila or pastime to reporters in airports or to, you know, people he just meets. He doesn't tell pastime like this. But somehow or other he started telling the story of Krishna marrying these 16,100 queens that he liberated from Bhamasura. And he kills Bhamasura. He tells how he killed this big demon with his Sudarshan chakra, sliced his head off, and went into his palace and married all of his queens, all the princesses there that were waiting for Krishna. And the devotee who was recalling the story, who was sitting there, he said the reporter, she's writing everything down. 16, how many queens? How many wives? 16,100. Wow, that's a lot. She was like, looking at her notebook, 16,100 queens. That's a lot of wives. And then she was getting all the details down from Prabhupada, and she was completely, he said that she was completely charmed by Prabhupada, by his presence and by his story, and she absorbed it. She didn't question it and didn't sort of think this is a bit unusual. Didn't say. She just accepted it. Prabhupada's telling this amazing story, and she just accepted it. And that was the interview. The interview was Prabhupada sharing this incredible pastime of Krishna. He never would do that. He wouldn't even really do that much, you know, when he's having room conversations and things, what to speak of interaction with a reporter at an airport. But it is very extraordinary, and it's an incredible situation that Krishna can do that. And that proves he's God, that he can expand himself into 16,108 forms. And he did that with one of the queens he married, Satya. Her father had this competition going that nobody could win this competition. His daughter will become, she'll be single for the rest of her life unless Krishna comes in. Nobody can enter this competition. They can try, but they're going to get really injured because they have to subdue these bulls. 7 big bulls with sharp horns. They have to tie them all up and defeat them. 7 in an arena with no weapons or anything, just with ropes. Go in there and tie up 7 bulls. So Krishna immediately, it says that he expanded himself. Atmanam saptadha kritva. He expanded himself into seven forms, one for each bull. And he took each bull and subdued that bull, tied him up and brought them to in front of Satya. And he married, he won her. That was his very chivalrous way to marry somebody, to prove his strength, like Lord Ramchandra in the Swayamvara ceremony, by breaking the bow of Janak Maharaj. So this way there are competitions, sometimes a competition to win the hand of the maiden. And Satya was very happy to go with Krishna. And there was Swayamvara ceremonies where the girl, sometimes she was told by her brothers or her family members, you can't marry Krishna, like Rukmini. And Rukmini, we've been hearing about Rukmini a few times in the last week or so. So Rukmini was, she wasn't a Swayamvara, but she chose Krishna. That's an example where she chose Krishna. And also Mitravinda, another queen that Krishna marries. There's five queens that they talk about in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Mitravinda is one of them, who's a Kalindi. Kalindi chose to marry Krishna and nobody else. And so she was performing tapasya, severe tapasya. Her father, the sun god, he created for her a mansion under the sea, in the river, a mansion underwater. And she was doing tapasya there. And when Krishna and Arjuna were out in the forest, and they saw her and her beautiful form, and Krishna said to Arjuna, go and find out who she is. What is she doing here? Why is she here alone on the bank of the river? So she told Arjuna that I only have one purpose in life, and that is to marry Krishna, to marry the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. That's my purpose. I don't have another purpose. Just I want to please him and marry him, she says. Tushitame saha Bhagavan. Just my purpose is for pleasure for Krishna, for God. And then Arjuna was amazed that this beautiful woman who's all alone, she just wants to marry Krishna. So he said, well, I know who Krishna is and he's here. And Arjuna took Kalindi to Krishna. And Krishna took Kalindi back on the chariot and they went back to Dwarka. And Kalindi, the daughter of the sun god, was married by Krishna. That was her desire. She chose Krishna and she did tapasya to gain Krishna's favor so that she could become his wife. And Bhadra was given to Krishna. Her brothers, they were very fond of Krishna in the Vrishni dynasty, and they thought, what if they could give their sister to anybody, it would be Krishna. So they approached Krishna, and Krishna was very happy to receive Bhadra. And Lakshmana, her opposite, her family don't want her to marry. She had a Swayamvara ceremony, but they don't want them to marry Krishna. They said, Krishna's not coming to this Swayamvara. Many princes are coming, but you can't marry Krishna. He's not a good person. He's not a good match. So he came, and she chose him, and there was a big fight, of course, and Krishna was successful in winning the hand of Lakshmana. And we know about Satyabhama was given to Krishna as in charity, and in the pastime of the Shamantakadru, Satyabhama and Jambavati was given also in the same pastime. Krishna got two of his very important queens in one pastime. He got Satyabhama and Jambavati in this pastime of Satrajit, the Shamantakadru. And so we got Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Bhadra, Lakshmana, Mitravinda, and then 1,100 queens, 16,100 queens. So 16,108 queens, princesses married by Krishna that come to Dwarka and occupy the palaces in Dwarka in a very majestic and a very opulent way. But these qualifications, that is transcendental lila. Prabhupada talks about the in this purport also the qualification that is Kadama Muni had seen Devahuti that she had never offered herself to anyone else. She was a virgin girl and she had never given her hand to anybody and therefore she was qualified to receive in marriage. And in some of the Christian groups, they have for youth, and particularly for girls, they have large groups for the girls, Christian girls, and they get the girls to in the club to make a promise in this group that they'll not date anybody before their marriage. They'll just marry one person. That's the first person that they give their heart to, they'll marry, and that's it. They're Christian people. And they have websites and things like this for these people to publicly announce that they're going to marry, and the person they're going to marry is this one man, and I'm not going to be for anyone else. They try to teach this principle of chastity, and they try to make it a cool thing to do. Because if it's not cool, nobody will buy into it. Sure. So they tried to make it like, wow, she did it, that's pretty cool. She's really, you know, she's good in athletics and she's smart and she's pretty. So I can do it too. So they make a big scene around this chastity thing for the Christian people. When I read about that, I was thinking maybe we should do that in ISKCON. We could have a group for the young girls and a group for the boys to teach the boys self-control, sense control. Because sometimes the boys... they can do the externals of brahmacharya and renunciation and you know, gurukulam or whatever, but they may not, at the end they may come out and not be sense controlled, and they may be, you know, very internally in a different space than they are externally promoting themselves. So that the lesson is that we take from Bhagavatam is that vasandanto gurohitam. We go to the ashram of the guru to control the senses. This is the ashram. ISKCON is, we may not be in a Vedic gurukula with grass hut, thatched roof, and on the bank of the river, but we're in a ashram. This is Prabhupada's ashram. ISKCON, the temple, is an ashram. So here we learn vasandanto gurohitam. To do things for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. In the morning we read out the scores for the pleasure of the deities and the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. That's what we learn to do here. We learn to please Krishna and Guru by controlling our senses. And it's a gradual process for sure. It's something that takes time. But it's something that is very much important for the development of the culture of this Vedic culture that Srila Prabhupada has transplanted. And the Vedic culture may not have the same kind of trappings and externals as Satya Yuga, because we're in Kali Yuga. We have many different manifestations of the material energy in Kali Yuga, and some of them are very detrimental for advancement in Krishna consciousness and spiritual life. But we have to continue to focus on and reference the principles of Vedic culture. And this chastity and sense control is very much inherent. It's embedded in Vedic culture, sense control. And when we learn sense control and we learn to please the spiritual master, then we can enter into the Grihastha Ashram and we can have a very productive life together with the man and the woman and produce auspicious progeny, offspring. As Devahuti and Kadama, they're going to produce the Supreme Personality of Godhead as offspring, and 9 very exalted daughters who will continue to expand the lineage in a very auspicious way. So good children will come from good parents, and good parents come from good training in the ashram or in the temple, through the instruction of Bhagavatam, the association of the Vaishnavas, the mercy of the Guru, the potency of the holy name, the shelter of the holy name, and the blessings of the deities, then we are able to successfully develop this strong attachment for the higher culture, a higher taste, rather than the lower taste. And that's something that we need to prioritize in our lives, that this is an important thing for me personally, and it will help others around me. If I learn to control my senses, if I can be chaste. You know, it said that when you put this elastic plaster on a bandage, it's got the sticky one, and you put it on your arm sometimes, or your hand or something, and there's some little hairs there, and you rip it off, it hurts. When you take it off, it hurts a bit. And then you put it back on again, it's got less stick, it doesn't hurt so much. Second time, it doesn't pull out so many hairs, because most of them got pulled out first time anyway. So it doesn't hurt so much. And then the third time, doesn't hurt. Fourth time, hardly even notice it. So it's like that with relationship. That first time when, if you give your heart to somebody, and then you say, oh, this is not working, it's just going to break. So that will hurt. You say, heartbroken, like this. Got heartbroken. And then second time, and then third time, fourth, fifth time, it's like whatever, you know. You don't even notice it. It's this normal thing, right? So we want to, that first one should be that's it. You know, that one devotee was saying to the girls, she was teaching the girls, she said, if you have a relationship before your marriage, then your heart breaks, right? Once, and then twice. And then when you give yourself to your husband three times, four times, you're giving him a broken heart, shattered heart, not broken, she said, shattered heart. Your heart won't be, because it's been given already to so many people. Of course, this philosophy and this culture is very alien and at odds with contemporary society, and it's definitely not what's being promoted in the billboards and in the marketing space and advertising, in the movies, in the cinema, in the soapies. It's not being promoted. In fact, the opposite's being promoted to what we're promoting here. That it's all right to have many relationships. It's completely normal to have many relationships. It's healthy to have many relationships. But we understand that it's not, because if we understand we're not this body, we're a spirit soul, and that we want to transcend the material energy, the material nature, then we have to start to do things that will enhance or that will nurture our spiritual being and nourish our identity as a spirit soul. Prabhupada says individuality with identity in spiritual life is real knowledge. That individuality, identity is spirit soul, or is spiritual by nature. And the individuality is that we want to serve Krishna in varieties of ways, unlimited varieties of ways. And we can do that, but there's regulation around that. And there's a culture around that. And that culture is very much determined by the degree of sense control. Cultivate men and women. It's not just that the men have to control, or just the women have to control. Men and women have to control their senses. And when we control the senses, we can do things for the pleasure of Krishna, not for the pleasure of the self. So we'll finish there. Any questions or comments?
Quite take the last point that you made on individuality and identity.
Yeah. The last point that I made about individuality and identity is that if we learn to control the senses and we promote this culture of this refined culture of Krishna consciousness, then our spiritual nature is being nourished and nurtured, and the by that sense control and service satisfaction of Guru, and the we are able to sustain that by our individual through our individual propensities. We have a propensity for singing, or a propensity for cooking, or a propensity for talking, or a propensity for fighting, or a propensity for something. So we offer that propensity to Krishna, and by offering that, we become purified and we become more connected with our spiritual identity. So that's why Srila Prabhupada, he couples those together in that very powerful statement. That's in the 5th chapter of the Gita. 16th verse, individuality with identity, identity with individuality. In Krishna consciousness is real knowledge. Is that okay?
Yes.
Anything else? So the question is, sorry, we're not sharing the microphone. The question is that even though people may be married officially in the Vedic samskara, and even they may be devotees, still we see there is divorce in our society and in outside society also, of those couples who have participated in the samskara, vivaha samskara. So how does this happen? Well, I think the answer is very much connected with the conclusion of the class through sense control, chastity, and by pleasing the spiritual master. And that's philosophically. And practically, the application of that is that we need to also learn skills for relationship skills, and we need to learn how to resolve differences or conflict when they arise. And when two people get together, there will be conflict, there will be tension, there will be misunderstanding, there will be sometimes disagreements. And we need to learn some techniques for dealing with that. So it needs to be it's not just an automatic thing, especially nowadays, because we live in a nuclear family. So we don't have support systems of uncles and aunties and in-laws, and who some people think that's a great liberation, that I'm not living with my mother-in-law. That's a benediction, that's a blessing. But actually, once you get over the... I've discussed this with many of my friends who live in extended families. And once they work out their relationship with their mother-in-law, whom for the first 12 months of the marriage they feel they're married to, after they've worked that out, then things start to smoothen out, and they start to benefit from the support that the mother-in-law and the father-in-law and the uncle and the aunties and the brothers and the cousins and the, you name it, the nephews and nieces, that they can offer to support. And that support's important. So without all that system in place, without all that support system in place, we're left very much to our own devices. So we need to... One of the reasons why divorce happens is because of lack of understanding, lack of appreciation, valuing, and inability to resolve differences, conflict resolution. So I think part of the our samskara, this Vivaha samskara, is training. And our Christian groups are very good at this, is preparing couples for premarital training. They have to do a compulsory 6-month course in premarital training too, so that they can understand the different psychology of the male and the female, and different expectations, clarify expectations before the big day, so that there's a better chance for success in the long term. It's a very big subject matter, and it's something that devotees are focusing on more and more. And there is an official body in ISKCON for what is it called? Grihastha. What is it? Grihastha Vision Team. The Grihastha Vision Team, and they're helping to develop courses and share different techniques and structures to support newly married couples and also older married couples who also will have conflict from time to time. And philosophically it's one thing, and then practically it requires a lot of realization and maturity and conviction to sustain it and to maintain it. And that's the benediction, or that's really the benefit, one of the big benefits of the Grihastha Ashram, the purification of the Grihastha Ashram. Each of the ashrams is for purification, and the brahmacharya has many struggles, internal and external conflicts that they have to resolve before they will become purified from their anattas. And in the Grihastha Ashram we have a partner to help us to resolve our internal and external struggles. So every ashram has its agents of purification. Anything else? Grantaraja Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Guru Premanandi.